ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
Reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 5, Chapter 14, entitled The Forest of Enjoyment, Text 23.
Atha
Na. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Learned scholars and transcendentalists therefore condemn the materialistic path of fruitive activity because it is the original source and breeding ground of material miseries, both in this life and in the next. Purport. Not knowing the value of life, karmis create situations whereby they suffer in this life and the next. Unfortunately, karmis are very attached to material sense gratification, and they cannot appreciate the miserable condition of material life, neither in this life nor in the next. Therefore, the Vedas enjoin that one should awaken in spiritual consciousness and utilize all his activities to attain the favor of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The Lord Himself says in Bhagavad Gita 9:27, Yat karoshi, yad ashnashi, yad juhoshi dadasi, yat tapasyasi kaunteya, tat kurushva madarpanam. O son of Kunti, all that you do, all that you eat, all that you offer and give away, as well as all austerities that you may perform, should be done as an offering unto me. The results of all one's activities should be utilized not for sense gratification, but for the mission of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The Supreme Lord gives all information in Bhagavad Gita about the aim of life, and at the end of Bhagavad Gita, He demands surrender unto Him. People do not generally like this demand. But one who cultivates spiritual knowledge for many births eventually surrenders unto the lotus feet of the Lord. Bahunam janmanamante jnanavan mam prapadyate. Herein we have been seeing in this episode of Jad Bharat conversing with Maharaj Rahugana. Jad Bharat is going on, verse after verse, chapter after chapter, describing so graphically and in detail the futility of material sense gratification, the hopes and horrors of this allegorical merchant who has entered into this forest of material enjoyment. So in our scriptures, like Srimad Bhagavatam, we see just like Krishna and Krishna consciousness is described in such a wonderful way with so many analogies and allegories, similarly material sense gratification is also described in such a detailed way. And herein we are seeing how step by step Jad Bharat is explaining the precarious condition, the predicament of this merchant who has entered this forest. Similarly, Bhaktivinoda Thakur also explains a similar kind of allegory in his commentary on the verse, Ai Nanda Tanuja Kinkara Patitam Mam Vishame Bhava Ambhudau, wherein Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is explaining that how a conditioned living entity has entered into this perilous, poisonous ocean. Vishame Bhava Ambhudau, and is suffering so much. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur is explaining using this particular example, and he gives a similar kind of allegory of a man who is trying to enter into an ocean, just like here this merchant who has entered this forest of material enjoyment. Similarly, this man who is trying to enter into this material ocean. And what are the different phenomena and different experiences that this conditioned living entity who has entered the Bhavasagar is experiencing? Srila Prabhupada also explained once in a morning walk that how when you look at an ocean from a distance, it looks very attractive, it looks very pleasing. But the same ocean, when you enter inside, you have a very different experience. And the same pleasing and attractive ocean might turn very horrific. Like this year when the tsunami tidal wave attacked so many parts of the world, it is explained that in Thailand, when these people were enjoying on the sea beach, and when they saw that all of a sudden this ocean is receding back inside many meters, in fact kilometers, and all of them, they were very much attracted to see. In fact, they ran towards the ocean to see that so many fishes and so many different creatures, the aquatics, which otherwise we are not able to see. Now we are seeing a very unique phenomena, that how all of a sudden the ocean is receding back. And this is what happens, that before that huge tidal wave comes, it bottles up first inside. So all the water was going inside, and then when it turned into that tsunami huge tidal wave, still some of the people over there, they were still more attracted to see that huge tidal wave then. And they were, you know, expressing that what a fantastic scene. Many of them were taking photographs that we have never seen such a huge tidal wave. So what they were doing, they were taking photographs of their own death coming in the form of that tidal wave. They were not able to see their own death approaching. Just like in the Niti, there is this verse which explains how there is this species, the vulture. And this vulture is able to see a dead animal from a distance of, say, 100 yojanas. Yodhikat yojana shatat pashyati hamisham khagah sa eva prapta kalastu pashabandham na pashyati. That this vulture can spot a dead animal from that great distance. So the eyesight of this vulture is so powerful that it can spot this dead animal from that great distance and comes down and comes to eat it. But the same vulture, khagaha, sa eva prapta kalastu, when the kala comes in front of him, when death comes in front of him, even if it is right next to its face, pashabandham na pashyati, this vulture who has such a fantastic eyesight cannot see death right in front of its face. So Prabhupada was explaining that from a distance, the ocean looks very attractive and pleasing. So similarly, when we are not in Maya, sometimes Maya looks very attractive and pleasing. But when we enter into, take just few steps in that particular realm, then we experience what are the horrors which we have to undergo then. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur further explains that this conditioned living entity who is trying to enter into this perilous, poisonous ocean, thinking that he will get some minerals, he will become wealthy, or he will enjoy a nice experience within this ocean. when he enters, the first thing he experiences are the huge tidal waves. So he's comparing these huge tidal waves to the threefold miseries: adhyatmika, adhibhautika, and adhidaivika. So these tidal waves are compared to these threefold miseries, tritapa, which are beating on the back of this conditioned living entity. And he is tossed up and down in so many various species of life, being beaten by the threefold miseries. And when he is so much beaten by these huge waves, so he becomes very much exhausted. He becomes very much thirsty, and therefore thinks that let me quench my thirst. But he is in the middle of the ocean, and if he wants to quench his thirst in the middle of the ocean, then the only water is available for him is the salty water of that ocean. So he tries to drink that salty water, and instead of quenching his thirst, that salty water aggravates his thirst more. So similarly, a conditioned living entity, when he thinks that I'm so much troubled anyways in this material world, so let me try to find some sense pleasure amidst all these troubles. So drinking that salty water is compared to engaging in sense gratification, engaging in sensual pleasures. That is the comparison which Bhaktivinoda Thakur makes of drinking that salty water, which simply aggravates that thirst to enjoy the sense objects more and more and more. Now, after being aggravated in his thirst, the conditioned living entity thinks that let me try to associate with someone in order to get some company within this ocean. So who are there with whom he can associate in that ocean? These deadly aquatics, the sharks, the jellyfishes, the octopuses. So these deadly aquatics, they are compared to the materialistic relatives which he takes shelter of. And then when he is in this precarious condition, he realizes that he is suffering so much and there is no hope within this material ocean. He has to come out, and then only there might be some relief. But how can he come out without someone helping him? So he tries to find out his own means by which he can come out of this material ocean. So he sees that there are some articles which are floating on the surface of the ocean. They are called flotsam and jetsam. You know, some articles like some tin, some paper, some plastic, which sometimes the ship crosses through a certain region of the ocean, throws off this flotsam and jetsam. So this conditioned living entity thinks that let me try to hold on to this piece of straw, this piece of wood, and with the help of this particular thing, I can cross over this ocean. So holding on to this flotsam is like trying to take shelter of karmakanda. This conditioning living entity thinks that if I perform some pious activities, if I perform some karmakandic activities, then by means of that, I can cross over this material ocean. So therefore, Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains that the only recourse for this conditioned living entity who is suffering in this material ocean is when a boat comes. And that boat is compared to the boat of devotional service. And a suitable captain who is compared to a pure devotee who takes out this conditioned living entity from his suffering condition and puts him in that boat. So we see that how our acharyas, they so wonderfully explain by these allegories which we can relate to. Since we are in this material world, we can relate to this material ocean, material forest. I was listening to a seminar of Bhakti Vigyan Goswami Maharaj, which he gave in Radhadesh, and he was explaining about the fall of the living entity within this material world. And he was quoting the Brihad Aranyaka Upanishad, in which it is explained very wonderfully that how a living entity falls from the spiritual world and comes in this material world. A beautiful example is given that all of us who are here in this material world, who left the association of Krishna from the spiritual world, we were like fireflies in the spiritual world, glowworms in the spiritual world. And just like if a firefly decides to show off its light when the sun is shining brilliantly, so in the spiritual world, Krishna is compared to that brilliantly shining effulgent sun. So there is always the shine of Krishna. And therefore it is explained that there are two things which Krishna cannot do. This is a kind of a negative glorification of Krishna. It's called Vyaja Stuti. That two things Krishna cannot do. One is, Krishna can never reject or send away a person who has come to surrender unto him. This is one thing which Krishna can never do. He can never reject a person who has come to surrender unto him. Like we have Vibhishan's example, who came to surrender unto Lord Ram, and all the other monkey soldiers, when Lord Ram asked these monkey soldiers about the credibility of Vibhishan, they were very much doubting. And Lord Ram gave the final verdict saying that what to speak of Vibhishan, even if Ravan comes and surrenders unto me, I will accept him also. So this is one quality of Krishna, that he can never send away or reject someone who has come to surrender unto me. And the other one is that Krishna can never see darkness, because Krishna's body is so effulgent. Wherever he might go, he just lights up that place. Again, we have in the 10th canto, when Krishna was stealing butter in the house of all the gopis, and they came complaining to Mother Yashoda, saying that even if we hide the butter in a dark place, your Krishna, you put on such dazzling ornaments that they light up the place, and you know, he can see where the butter is hidden. So Mother Yashoda is saying that, okay, then I will remove the ornaments. But then they say, even if you do that, but still the body of Krishna is so effulgent that a kind of effulgence which comes out, kind of light which emanates from his body, which lights up also again everything, every dark place. So this is another thing which Krishna can never see. Krishna can never see darkness. So this example is given that we were like fireflies, and Krishna, who is like that brilliantly effulgent sun, and there is no darkness in the spiritual world. So if a firefly wants to show its light, the firefly has to come to a dark place. So therefore, we were sent here in this material world, this dark place, wherein we can show our little light, little insignificant light, and think that yes, we also can in a little way match up with the light of Krishna, who is like a brilliantly effulgent sun. And the predicament of a conditioned living entity who has fallen into this material world, like that firefly trying to show off its light, is that even if it tries to show its light to whatever capacity, it can never match with the sun. And also, even if all the fireflies come together and they think that, let us try to light up the dark sky, even if all the fireflies come together, they can never do that. So similarly, all the efforts by all the living entities put together within this material world to lord it over this material nature, is futile. So, when a living entity comes in this material world trying to show off its light like that firefly, then the Upanishad explains that there are four desires which come in the mind of this conditioned living entity. The first desire which comes when this living entity comes in this material world is the desire to associate with the opposite sex. And this desire comes up because immediately the living entity feels the incompleteness within his life because there is no Krishna. In the spiritual world, that same intensity and purified desire was directed towards Krishna. So the living entity was always feeling the completeness in his life because of constant association with Krishna. But after coming in this material world, when forgets Krishna, but still wants to fulfill that incompleteness, so therefore desires to associate with the opposite sex. Srila Prabhupada in a morning walk, one time he asked this question, why do you have sex desire? And all the devotees, they were wondering how to answer this question. Why do we have sex desire? And they were trying to figure out what proper answer to give. And there was a silence. And then Prabhupada looked back and said, because you want to. And the devotees, they felt that Prabhupada was asking a question which appeared to be so insurmountable even to answer, what to speak of getting over that desire. But just by giving a simple answer that because we want to enjoy sex life, therefore we are put into this material world. And if we just don't desire that, we can get rid of so many other encumbrances. So the devotees felt very much relieved by that answer. So herein, the Upanishad explains that the first desire is this one. And then the conditioned living entity, after associating with the opposite sex, wants to have children. And this is another desire to imitate the creative ability of Krishna. Like Krishna, who is the supreme creator, so the conditioned living entity who desires in such a way is trying to imitate the creative ability of Krishna by desiring to have offsprings after that union. And then to maintain that pleasure and to maintain that little creation which the living entity has done, the next desire which comes up is a desire for wealth. And that is called Bahir Pran. It's like we have Antah Pran, which maintains this physical body from within. And from without, there is this Bahir Pran, the wealth which one acquires to maintain those other two desires. And finally, when in spite of all these arrangements, when he becomes frustrated, then the next desire is the desire for the ability to speak. Because in that frustration, he wants to speak to himself and get some satisfaction just by speaking to himself. Like yesterday, somebody sent me a mail, one devotee, that the only time when the husband opens the mouth in front of the wife is when he yawns. That is the only time when he gets the opportunity to open the mouth. So herein, when this conditioned living entity is totally frustrated in his attempts to fulfill those desires, then the ultimate desire is that he wants to have the ability to speak and just pacify himself by speaking something good about oneself, something good about this material world. So herein also Jad Bharat is explaining, and in this particular section, Jad Bharat is explaining that how there are these three phases of sense gratification, which a conditioned living entity who has entered into this material forest, he passes through these three phases. The first phase of this sense gratification, Jada Bharat is speaking about, is, he says it is like Kama Madhu Lavan, that the sense gratification is very insignificant. It is like drops of honey. And yes, it has got some sweetness, but because it is very insignificant and tiny, so therefore, instead of satisfying the conditioned living entity, this little insignificant pleasure of sense gratification simply aggravates that thirst more and more and more. As Srila Prabhupada one time said, that what is the difference between Maya and Krishna? Maya has the capacity to attract us, but it doesn't have the capacity to satisfy. It can only attract, but it can never satisfy. But Krishna, he can even attract and also he can satisfy any living entity. So here in Jada Bharat is saying that Kama Madhu Lavan, that this sense pleasure, the pleasure derived out of sense gratification, is like madhu. It's like honey, but just in a drop, not in huge amounts. So this is the first aspect of sense gratification, that the sense pleasure is very insignificant, and therefore instead of satisfying, it simply aggravates more and more and more. And Maya is so clever that she only gives a little sample, a little fraction, a fragment of that entire pleasure which one gets in the spiritual world when it gets perverted in this material world and keeps on attracting. Like there is this Zen story of a Zen teacher who was trying to explain to his students this particular phenomena of sense gratification, that how the pleasure is so insignificant. So what he did one day, it was a fasting day, and he asked all the students to fast for the whole day. And the next day, he kept in front of them, you know, baskets full of succulent, juicy grapes. And just upon looking at those grapes, all the students, they were hoping that after this long fast, finally now, they will not only quench their thirst by eating these juicy grapes, but also they can satisfy their hunger. So it was kept, one basket was kept in front of each of these students. And they were about to taste it when this master said to them that you are allowed to eat these grapes, but only one. You can pick only one piece of that grape from that bundle of grapes. And with our experience, we know that whenever we eat grapes, you know, just one morsel, we want to take like a handful of at least 5 to 6 grapes. So imagine after a fast, when the succulent grapes are in front and you are asked to take only one grape, it is more, you know, of a miserable situation than when it was not there in front. So he explained that similarly, the pleasure of this material world which we get is like this. The hopes are given of the entire bunch of grapes. But on a practical level, what pleasure we get out of this materialistic sense gratification is that of only one single grape. Little drops of honey-like sense gratification. Kama Madhu Lavan. And then the second phase of sense gratification, Jada Bharat explains in this particular verse, is that yes, the pleasure is insignificant. It is like a little drop of honey. But the arrangements which one has to make for that little insignificant pleasure, that is not insignificant. So herein we can see the irony that the pleasure derived is insignificant, but the arrangements which one has to make, vichinvan yada paradara paradravyani avarundhano, that the arrangements which has to be made for that insignificant pleasure is not insignificant, it's very significant. One has to make elaborate arrangements to get that little insignificant pleasure. So Jada Bharat is explaining that this is the irony which this conditioned living entity has to deal with. And therefore, in the Bhagavatam, we have that verse, Pumsa Striya Mithuni Bhavametam Tayor Mitho Hriday Granthi Mahur Atha Griha Kshetra Suta Apta Vittai Janasya Moho Yam Aham Mameti. That particular binding knot in the heart for this attraction between man and woman, it develops further in order to enjoy that. Atha Griha Kshetra Suta Apta Vittai. And as against this Atha Griha Kshetra Suta Apta Vittai, we have Atha Sri Krishna Namadi. That when we come in contact with the chanting of Hare Krishna, with this process of Krishna consciousness, that all the other things get attached along with this chanting of Hare Krishna. That the name, form, qualities and pastimes of Krishna. So in materialistic consciousness, it is Atha Griha Kshetra Suta Apta Vittai. And when one becomes spiritually enlivened, then it is Atha Sri Krishna Namadi. Jai Sri Radha Gopinaji Ki. So herein, Jada Bharat in the second phase is explaining that so many elaborate arrangements this conditioned living entity has to make in order to enjoy that insignificant pleasure. And Prabhupada one time he said that these elaborate arrangements, and they give it the name economic development. And what is this economic development? It is nothing but lust on an organized scale. That is this economic development. So to engage in eating, sleeping, mating and defending, that too in a very, very elaborate way. And the kind of arrangements which people do, like if we take these four things which people are so much busy enjoying, eating, sleeping, mating and defending, and what are the arrangements which people make just to enjoy these insignificant pleasures. Like eating. Now the animals, they just whatever they find, they can live on that. They subsist on whatever they get naturally. But when a human being wants to eat something, wants to satisfy this desire of eating, makes such elaborate arrangements. Like there is a case of a millionaire from New York, and many millionaires like that from so many parts of the world. He every day arranges his favorite delicacy, you know, a roasted chicken from Paris. And there is an entire team, you know, his private airplane and a crew who is working every day to just bring that for him from Paris. Can you imagine, just to satisfy that little tongue, so many arrangements this person has to make. You know, an entire aircraft, his own private airlines, and you know, pilots and so many other people, and going all the way to Paris and bringing it every day for this person. Now we see the animals, even if you take a carnivorous animal, a tiger, you know, he's not demanding to the tigress that today I want a roasted chicken. You know, he's just whatever gets in the jungle, eats that. So when it comes to activity like that on the bodily platform, how much a human being works hard, makes elaborate arrangements for that insignificant pleasure. And then sleeping. In Germany, they have come up with a bed. And this bed is so big, it is like a helipad, a small airplane can land on it. It is so big in size. And there are various panels which are attached next to the bed, that if you want while sleeping the sound of rain, because people, they like the sound of rain very much when they want to go to sleep. So you can press a panel and the sound of rain will come. And if you want, if someone is in a mode of ignorance too much, wants the sound of owls and crickets, then he just presses another button and the sound of owls and crickets will come. And if some people are still attached to their mother's lullaby, then they press another button and a lullaby, you know, one person starts singing. And if he wants to get up in the morning, because they don't get up when the sun rises, so they want to have an experience of the sun rising in front of them when they get up, whatever time. So there is a system wherein slowly some light comes in front of their eyes, an artificial kind of sunlight, which just comes slowly as if the sun is rising right in their room from that bed. And then they have a very nice singing which is recorded in it. And you just set it with the alarm, and that nice singing will be for your pleasure in order to make you get up. And if you are a shallow sleeper, then you might get up with that nice singing. And if you are a deep sleeper, then that sweet singing further turns into loud shrills. And if still this person can't get up, then the bed starts shaking vigorously. And if still this person cannot get up, there is an eject system, and this person is ejected out. So just see, just for sleeping, people spend billions of dollars just to get a bed like that. Now we have in India, you know, some sadhus sleeping in the railway platforms, and whatever place they get, in spite of all these sounds, you know, they are sound asleep, even the animals. Then mating, what to speak of this? What elaborate arrangements people make for that? Recently I was told that one Italian couple, they were so fed up with the human beings that they wanted to get married surrounded by sharks, whom they loved very much. So they entered on the marriage day, when they wanted to marry, they entered a shark tank, and instead of the wedding dress, they were wearing swimsuits and with the rings. Now, if you're surrounded by sharks, you know, you might become the wedding feast for them. So they entered in a cage. So they were in a cage, and in that tank, which was full of sharks, so they exchanged the wedding rings underwater, surrounded by the sharks. So just see how people make such weird and such kind of arrangements for that. Then defending. Now, big armies, navies and air force and all that. And defend from whom? Defend from other human beings. We want to defend from our own species. As it is said that humans are the only species which are destroying its own species very systematically. So we are arranging with such complex defense systems just to protect ourselves from our own species. Now again, if you see in the animal kingdom, you don't find, you know, lions or deers, they are setting up an army against each other. You don't even find a lion's club in, you know, in the lion society. The humans, they have made a lion's club. And you don't find the fishes, they are making a navy so that they can protect themselves when they are in the ocean from any attack. Or you don't find those who are flying in the sky, they are making an air force in order to defend themselves. Whatever naturally they have the systems inbuilt in them, they defend themselves. So herein we see that how what Jad Bharat is saying, that just for these basic things of eating, sleeping, mating and defending, how much this human being, this conditioned living entity, is working so hard, arranging for elaborate support systems. And then the third phase of sense gratification, in which Jad Bharat is speaking to Maharaj Rahuvana, is that the enjoyment is insignificant and the arrangement is very significant. And after all the pleasure has been done, the sense gratification is over, the reaction is again very much significant. One might question that if I'm enjoying an insignificant pleasure, so the reaction to this insignificant pleasure should also be insignificant. No. Jad Bharat is saying, Nihata patati apare niraye. That he's nihata, he's beaten. This person who goes to enjoy mindless sense gratification, he's beaten. Patati apare niraye. And he is thrown in many hellish conditions. So the reactions, again, are not insignificant. The pleasure might be insignificant, but the arrangements are very significant, and the reaction again is very, very significant. As it is said that there are no free lunches in this world. There is always a price tag to everything, and Maya hands over the bill after we enjoy her. One time Prabhupada was on a morning walk, and one fisherman came up to Prabhupada and was trying to offer a fish to Prabhupada. So Prabhupada said, no, you enjoy. And Prabhupada started walking, and all the devotees, they were wondering, why did Prabhupada say like that? You enjoy. You're not supposed to eat fish. And then after a few steps, Prabhupada said, and then suffer in hell. So you enjoy now, and then suffer in hell. And that's what Jad Bharat is saying over here. And we have the example of Ajamil and Saubari Muni from the Srimad Bhagavatam, that how, in order to enjoy that insignificant pleasure, how much they had to work hard. It is explained that Ajamil, in order to satisfy that prostitute, he married that prostitute, which is even unheard in Kali Yuga. We don't hear very commonly that people are marrying prostitutes. But Ajamil, he was so much infatuated to get that pleasure that he actually married that prostitute. And it's explained, Nyayato anyayato dhanam babharshaya kutumbinya. That by legal, nyayata anyayata, by legal and illegal means, which was supposed to take him to hell, he was trying to satisfy this prostitute. And how? Kutubbinya babharshaya. That he was maintaining the sons and daughters of that prostitute. That prostitute who had begotten so many children from other men, he was taking care not only of those that prostitute, but also those children. And then what to speak, he had so many children with that prostitute. So, nyayata, anyayata. Properly, improperly, legally, illegally, he was doing all sorts of means, and he was a brahmana. But he had to take up all those means in order to satisfy her. And in case of Saubari Muni, it is explained that when Saubari Muni married the 50 daughters of King Mandhata, immediately after the marriage, all these wives, the 50 wives of Saubari Muni, they started fighting with each other. They gave up their sisterly relationship. They started fighting with each other. And just to mitigate that fight, Saubari Muni had to use his mystic power to expand, to give so many pleasures. So, brought them a house and garments and, parks and nice reservoirs, sandalwood creams, it is mentioned. And so many different arrangements he did. And later on, Saubari Muni, one day he was sitting alone, and he was just thinking and reflecting back that what have become of me? What I was doing, and just see what have become of me. So in a beautiful verse, he's saying, Aho imam pashyata me vinasham tapasvina saccharita vritasya
अंतर्जले वारिचर प्रसंगात प्रच्यावितं धर्म ब्रह्म चिरं यत.
He is saying in this verse, अहो इमं पश्यत मे विनाशम. Alas, just see at the pitiful and miserable condition of mine now. I was performing such sacred tapasya, antarjale varichara prasanga, and such charita vritasya, under the water. And what kind of waters? It was the waters of river Jamuna. He was in Vrindavan, under Jamuna, he was performing sat charita vritasya. He had taken such sacred austerity and such sacred vows. But just by seeing two fishes coming together to enjoy sex pleasure, he is saying, antar jale varichara prasangat. I fell from my Brahman position and now I am in this condition. So a very significant thing Prabhupada writes in the translation of this verse, that Saubari Muni is saying this verse to all the conditioned living entities of this world, that everyone should see and observe my fall down and should learn from it. So Saubari Muni, he is openly in the page of Srimad Bhagavatam for all time to come, he is revealing his position and is warning anyone in this material world who is trying to get into that materialistic life. So herein we see that Jad Bharat, in his explanation to Maharaj Rahuguna, he is in every chapter, when he is speaking about sense gratification, he is bringing out such newer points and such deeper points, in which he is explaining to Maharaj Rahuguna that sense gratification within this material world is so futile. And as here in this particular section we saw, he is explaining that it is insignificant, but in order to achieve that insignificant pleasure, one has to make such significant arrangements, and in spite of making such significant arrangements for enjoying that insignificant pleasure, the reaction is hellish. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Is there any question or comments? ग्रंथराज श्रीमद् भागवतम की शिला प्रभुपाद की